Live from New York, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Got my mojo working, but just don't work on you.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. I'd like to welcome everyone to an hour of empowerment. Today, we're going to find out why popular soda ingredients pose a cancer risk if you consume them, from Johns Hopkins University. We're also going to look at what happens if you consume oily fish. What about consuming black tea? We've heard of green tea. Well, according to University of Aquileia in Italy, it could prevent cardiovascular disease. That's good. And why some experts say pregnant women should be careful about vaccines. Also, how to combat age-related brain atrophy, Barry Volk. And I'm sure you've seen some of the promotions going on around the networks about American exceptionalism. How good our economy is now. We've come out of our economic slump. Have we? Professor Paul Craig Roberts begs to differ. And how we are the freest nation in the world. Are we? John Whitehead says, what about forced blood draws and DNA collection and biometric scans? What country is this? And when it comes to being able to be a peace-loving country, William J. Astor of Thomas Dispatch says, war is America's new normal. And what about the fact that in America you have some protections? We have a Fourth Amendment. We have a First Amendment. Do you? Matt Pepe of Countercurrent says the authoritarianism of the American police state is here and getting worse. All of us are interested in making sure that if we're consuming a product, it's not dangerous, especially when millions of people, tens of millions of people, drink soft drinks on a daily basis. You'd like to think that they're safe. From Johns Hopkins University, quote, public health researchers have analyzed soda consumption data in order to characterize people's exposure to a potential carcinogenic byproduct of some types of caramel color. Caramel color is a common ingredient in colas and other dark soft drinks. The results show that between 44 and 58% of people over the age of 6 typically have at least one can of soda per day, possibly more, potentially exposing them to 4-MEI, and a possible human carcinogen formed during the manufacturing of some kinds of caramel color. The results were published online in the PLOS ONE scientific journal. So then it goes on to talk about this. I wrote about this caramel coloring in 1974 in How to Get Rid of the Toxins in Our Food when I was looking at commonly consumed items. It's been around a long time. We've known it's a carcinogen for a long time. That's the power of the industry, both the sugar industry and the confectioners industry and soft drink industry, that their lobbyists can keep a bad product, a dangerous product, potential cancer-causing product in the product, and we're consuming it. So whose interest does the FDA represent? Now, a lot of people have problems with damaged blood vessels, probably most people, and that's because we have a highly inflammatory diet. It's highly acidic. Just look at your common diet. Probably 90% of what you're going to consume in a day is acidic and is inflammatory. Coffee, soft drinks, bread, muffins, bagels, pizzas, hot dogs, hamburgers, french fries, barbecued ribs, pesticides on salads, all that is pro-inflammatory. That damages our blood vessels. Damaged blood vessels then means that a lot of those blood vessels will clog or they'll have lesions and you end up with epithelial dysfunction. That in turn leads to a greater risk of heart disease. Just keep in mind that the epithelial progenitor cells, stem cells made in the bone marrow that repair the linings of blood vessels when they become damaged, These are important in this because when you eat an oily fish, and the only oily fish I would recommend would be sardines, you actually help to fix the damaged blood vessels faster, reducing your risk of cardiovascular disease. This is according to University of Reading in the United Kingdom. Quote, it is well known that these high in omega-3 fatty acid foods can improve the elasticity of blood vessels and potentially protect against heart disease. However, the reason for these positive effects are less clear. This study tested two emerging markers of cardiovascular disease that are of particular interest in researchers in the quest for answers. Over a period of 8 weeks, the researchers introduced small amounts, 3 grams a day, of fish oil to a volunteer group of people with mild risk of cardiovascular disease in mixed age range. At the end of 8 weeks, the study group increased their EPC numbers by up to 15% compared to the control group. And so that was good. So in lay language, when you consume an oily fish, you're helping your heart, you're helping your blood vessels. We are not having any debate in the United States right now about the dangers of the flu vaccine for women, pregnant women. We should. According to Natural Society, whenever you hear one of these public service announcements, and you hear them all over the place, on local radio stations encouraging pregnant women to get the whooping cough or the pertussis vaccination or the flu vaccine during their third trimester of pregnancy in order to confer that immunity to their newborns, which is highly recommended by the CDC. Well, the pertussis vaccination is usually packaged as DTAP, or diphtheria, tetanus, and pertussis vaccine. So adverse side effects are tripled. Naturally, the CDC, with its revolving doors into the vaccine industry, example, the former director of the CDC, Dr. Julia Gerberding, now runs Merck's vaccine department, says there's no adverse reports from pregnant women who received the DTP vaccines. However, very few reports even make it to the vaccine adverse event reporting system. It's estimated at best 5% of adverse reactions are reported, not just among pregnant women, but among all children and adults who get vaccinated. The CDC and the entire medical establishment lies when it comes to vaccines and flu epidemics, and those lies are supported by the mainstream media. Firstly, hardly anyone even knows about the government's own vaccine adverse event reporting system. The paperwork is staggering enough to discourage doctors from using it as they look to work with their next patient. Even worse, doctors are thoroughly programmed to protect the vaccine program in the United States. Many recipients of vaccinations have bought into what the high priests of mainstream medicine preach. It's part of a social milieu belief system. Most don't question their doctors when it comes to vaccination. But here's what you should know. And this is all from the literature. Quote, this is a person. I got both vaccines, seasonal and flu vaccine, on Thursday. I was 9 weeks pregnant. I miscarried on Sunday. I was told by several doctors to get these vaccines. Now I wish I'd followed my gut feeling and not got them at all. That's not an isolated case. Here's another. Quote, I feel like I had a healthy baby and I caused this miscarriage by getting the H1N1 vaccine. My doctors pushed it. I researched online and there have been many miscarriages after the M1N1 vaccine, but they haven't been reported since it's hard to say what caused the miscarriages. And another, quote, I had the normal flu shot and I had a miscarriage at 8 weeks. They told me it wasn't related and there's no way in the world that I would know. But I believe otherwise. Here's what you should know about the flu shot and the promotion. Despite the CDC's mainstream media hype, the chances of a serious health event from the flu while pregnant is very low. This was reported during the flying flu scare of 2009 by Dr. Russell Blaylock, neurosurgeon and author of Excitotoxins. According to Dr. Blaylock, various studies have proven that artificially stimulating the immune system causes a cytokine immune reaction that damages the forming brain of a fetus. Now, throw in thimerosal mercury additives, as well as formaldehyde, aluminum, and other toxic materials delivered in vaccines, and these circulate through the fetus if a pregnant woman is vaccinated. The child can become prone to seizures, autism, and other brain abnormalities. All of these are neurological problems. Here's what Dr. Blaylock says, quote, "The bottom line is vaccinating a pregnant woman is very hazardous to the mother's health as well as the baby's." Now, last evening on my Progressive Commentary Hour, I had four experts, all MDs and one PhD scientist. None are affiliated with any special interest group. They've all published in peer-reviewed literature. And they all said that we only looked at one vaccine, and that was Gardasil. Hundreds dead, tens of thousands injured. And these are not babies. These are teenagers, and completely normal, healthy, athletic, they get the Gardasil, and boom, now they end up with all forms of problems. And that is what's happening out there. Now they want to mandate this, and they're going state to state, including New York State, to try to get mandatory vaccines for Gardasil so you cannot opt out, not for religious reasons or philosophical reasons. All right, let's just say they get this. And this is being supported by leading corporate Democrats. Let's say that they mandate this. How long do you think it'll be before they start mandating other vaccines? And then how long do you think it'll be before they mandate, for the public interest, that everyone boarding an airplane must first show that they've had flu vaccines? Or before you can visit a hospital? Or before you can work in certain buildings, or before you can get on a train or subway. Once they see how profitable it is, and once they see how gullible the public is, then it's just a matter of time before it becomes mandatory. Then it just becomes normal. Now, here's what you're not aware of. Currently, there are 300 additional individual vaccines being developed for everything. And they intend to get those in your body. That's why they're making them. They know full well none of these vaccines do anything constructive, but that's not their issue. They're protected. You can't sue them. So just keep that in mind. You should be very concerned about this. Unfortunately, most people are not. Separately, black tea. Black tea is good for you, according to this study. Quote, "Black tea may help lower blood pressure for people with elevated levels," a new study has shown. 2 cups of black tea per day for 8 days was associated with a significant improvement in arterial stiffness, decreases in systolic and diastolic blood pressure. And this is from a university in Italy. So get your green tea. Now, your black tea, green tea, white tea, oolong tea, they're all good. But get them on a daily basis. And if for some reason you can't, you can always get yourself some supplements of the tea and take them that way. I read an interesting article by Barry Volk on the brain. And after I've been giving information yesterday on just one nutrient to help people with the brain, realized that an awful lot of people don't appreciate that we lose as much as almost 0.4% of your brain mass every year. The rate of brain shrinkage increases with age, and it's a major factor in early cognitive decline and premature death. And studies show that older adults with significant brain shrinkage are much more likely to have cognitive and movement disorders than similarly aged people with normal brain size. They are also at a greater risk of vascular death and ischemic stroke. In addition, atrophy of specific brain regions has been associated with a variety of cognitive, behavioral, and mental health problems. Shrinkage of the temporal lobes, for example, is associated with a 181% increase in the risk of major depression. That's big time. And perhaps most alarmingly, brain shrinkage sharply increases risk of early death. Younger individuals with overall brain shrinkage have as much as a 70% increase in the chance of dying. And the severe atrophy of the frontal lobe, that's right behind your forehead, increases the risk of death by 30%. So brains also shrink from the inside out, resulting in enlargement of the fluid-filled ventricles, or hollow spaces on the interior of the brain, and such shrinkage has its own known to cause early death. Now just imagine what your cell phone and computers are doing to your brain. We know they're overheating them. We know they're increasing inflammation. It could also cause shrinkage. Even though brain shrinkage is progressive, a growing number of neuroscientists believe that brain shrinkage can be slowed or even reversed. And so I just want to share with you that brain shrinkage is not inevitable, and you can do a great deal to reverse this, just like you can with diabetes once you've been diagnosed, or heart disease once you've been diagnosed. And there's a lot of connection between cardiovascular disease and brain shrinkage. I'll bet you've never heard anyone say, hey, if you have a problem with your heart, you also have a problem with your brain. And perhaps the most obvious connection is the one between blood vessel disease, which is atherosclerosis, and brain volume. Atherosclerosis occurs when plaque builds up inside your arteries, from what I just mentioned earlier in the program, all those, you know, hot dogs, breads, meats, and restricts blood flow throughout your body. Now, although we typically think of the negative effect of atherosclerosis on the heart, its effect on your brain can be equally devastating. So when blood flow to the brain is restricted, your brain receives less oxygen and fewer nutrients, causing it to shrink. And studies show that people with lower levels of blood flow to the brain have smaller total brain volumes and total thickness of the cortex, that's the active surface layer of the brain, resulting in poor performance on tests of cognitive function. In addition, disease of the coronary arteries, that's the arteries that feed the heart muscle, is also associated with decreased brain volume. So when compared to healthy controls, patients with coronary artery disease had significantly smaller gray matter volume in several regions of their brain. This is especially significant since gray matter is where all thinking, feeling, and sensory and motor function originates. But the relationship between cardiovascular disease and brain volume operates in both directions. People with smaller brain volumes have been found to have a 58% increase in the risk of death from all causes, and a 69% increase in the risk of vascular death, and a 96% increase in the risk of stroke compared with those with normal brain volumes. So this is something serious. You don't want your brain shrinking because you're going to die sooner. Now, there are things we can do. First, we can get on to a healthy program and detox, and you really need to do that. If you really work at it and you are really strict on it, you can begin the process in about 2 weeks if you have 100% focus. And by the way, if you're diabetic, you're more likely to have peripheral nervous system problems, because diabetics are notorious for having peripheral nervous problems, leading to conditions like painful neuropathy and blindness-induced diabetic retinopathy. Well, there are new findings that show that high blood sugar, which you're going to have once you have sugar in a meal or refined carbohydrate in a meal, create advanced glycation end products that they produce, and that causes damage to the central nervous system, and specifically neurodegeneration and brain atrophy. So every time you eat a pizza, every time you have bagels, every time you have the foods that we as a society enjoy, you're shrinking your brain. Maybe that's why politicians have such shrunk brains. Did you read about that politician who wanted to know in a congressional hearing yesterday if a woman could take a pill that had a camera in it and it could go to her vagina and see something there about her pregnancy, and he had to be informed that, you know, there's no direct connection between the digestive system and the vagina. He didn't know that. But he's a legislator? Wow. Also, if you're overweight, you're going to shrink your brain. Now, just imagine you have heart disease, you're diabetic, and you're overweight. Then you're in real trouble. You're going to have dementia, memory loss, cognitive problems, a greater chance of stroke, and you're going to die a whole lot earlier than anyone else. That's just the reality. I wish it were otherwise. If you have sleep disturbances, if you drink, that will also cause it. So what's the good news here? What can we do? Well, we can change our diet. For those of you who are going to be detoxing, and or those of you who've been in the different health support groups, I've had over 46 of those, 45 of them, you've seen the radical dynamic changes. That's one good thing. But not everyone chooses to work with other people. It's a lot easier, especially if you have a health coach or a physician that is working closely with you, or a dietitian or a nutritionist. If not, then a conscientious family member. But you got to get someone to work with you to make sure that you're doing it right. Then there are things that can protect you. The B vitamins, for example, protect your brain. It also normalizes your metabolic function. It regulates homocysteine. And elevated homocysteine leads to significant brain shrinkage and dementia. And most elderly have elevated homocysteine. Vitamin B12, very important. B6, important. Folic acid, important. The omega-3 fatty acids, the fish oils, or the vegan oils from avocado, flaxseed, walnuts, olive oil. Those are all good because the DHA fraction protects your brain. A superstar for protecting your brain from atrophy and shrinking, pomegranate. Pomegranate's very high in polyphenols. Those are plant-derived molecules with anti-inflammatory and neuroprotective properties. I make sure I get pomegranate every single day into my body. I would say a minimum of 8 ounces of pomegranate juice a day, unsweetened, of course. Now, resveratrol, there is if you're eating grapes, great, drinking like Concord grape juice without, not from concentrate, but from juice, that's good. Or highest of all, grape powders. That's where you get the most. Because you're getting resveratrol. And that's really important for preventing aging and age-related cardiovascular and neurological conditions. And chronic fatigue syndrome as well, by the way. And so those are the things that can make a difference in our brain, and it's one of the reasons why we have to keep our brain healthy by the choices that we make. Do I have a terrific special for you? For those of you who care about good digestion, great digestion. Now, we all go through times in life when we don't have perfect digestion. Maybe we're rushed. Maybe we should have taken our time and eaten slowly and chewed our food thoroughly, but we didn't. What to do? How about making sure that you take one or two capsules of digestive enzymes? What do you get in these? First off, you get the non-dairy acidophilus, and you get bromelain, pepsin. You get dietase and cellulase and lactase and amylase and protease and lipase and chamomile and peppermint and angelica, ginger, marjoram, coriander, papaya, red peppers, and cloves. All that in this very special digestive enzyme. Now, it normally sells for about $18. But this week only, $4.95. You heard me right, $4.95. Not the $18 normal price. That's a tremendous savings. Tremendous for the digestive enzymes. How do you get it? Simple. Call, and you're limited to 2 bottles to a person. Call 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065 because you care about your digestion. Or you have a mother, a father, someone else, and you care about their digestion. Never hurts to have a bottle of digestive enzymes. And this is more than just enzymes. This is chamomile and peppermint and angelica and ginger. marjoram, coriander, papaya, red clover, cloves, acidophilus, bromelain, pepsin, and all the different salicylase, lactase, amylase, protease, lipase, dietase. Where else can you get all that? For $4.95? I don't know any place anywhere. Give a call right now and get your digestive enzymes. A maximum of two per person. Call 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. Next up, I want to take a look at American exceptionalism. I believe that we have been, at various times in our history, exceptional in both constructive and destructive ways. And there's something to be said for those people today, and there are millions of people today who go out of their way each day to try to make it a better world for others and for themselves in a good way. They're harmonizing their energies. But then you have those people who seem to have an inordinate amount of influence who want us to be at war. They don't want any non-military approach. Bill O'Reilly, who, by the way, I believe Bill's, in the next 2 to 3 months, his reputation is going to be shown in a different way for all the mistakes he's made in his reporting. And then let's see what happens to him at that point. But he wants war, boots on the ground, overstating how many ISIS fighters there are, and never once acknowledging how we were complicit by being in the Middle East with troops in countries and occupying those countries actually caused Al-Qaeda and ISIS and other groups to be founded, even funding the Mujahideen when they were fighting the Russians. So what we have to understand is one of the biggest reasons that we have a constant war mentality is because the privatization of war. According to William J. Astor, the reason that we privatize war, and I've mentioned it many times on the show, is the U.S.'s military's recourse to private contractors has strengthened the profit motive for making war. Anytime you have a profit motive of anything, you're going to prolong what you're doing. And unlike the citizen soldiers of past eras, the mobilized warrior corporations of America's new mercenary movement, Halliburton, KBR, they got nearly $40 billion in contracts for the Iraq war alone. And the Dyn Corporation, $4 billion to train 150,000 Iraqi police. Well, how did that work out? And then the Blackwater group, a $1.3 billion in Iraq, along with boatloads of controversy. Remember, they're the ones who were just found guilty of killing those innocent civilians from the helicopter. And yet, you know that Sean Hannity and Mark Levin, they're all going to come running to the defense of the militarized cop that decides to, you know, beat someone up. And I've been posting a lot of those recently because I just want to show you these are not a few rotten apples out there. When you militarize the police and you have 50,000 SWAT raids a year and you hold no one accountable, and you have a different standard of criteria. They can break the law, they can hurt people, they can kill people, and they walk away. Then what does that say about what we become as a society and those policymakers who are allowing that to happen? Because if we had any human being, actual real human being, as president, which we haven't had since FDR, maybe a little bit in Eisenhower, then we would have had this stopped by executive order and by the power of controlling the attorney general. They would have said, we're not going to have this anymore. Close down the Homeland Security. Close down all these national security agencies. We don't need them, and we don't. We don't need SWAT teams going out to break in doors to, you know, flash grenades because you want to serve a summons because a student's late on a debt, true story, in California. But as long as you privatize it, you'll have corporations that are not accountable, they're indemnified, and then there is no incentive to demobilize. And like most corporations, their business model is based upon profit through growth, and growth is most rapid when wars and participations for wars are the favorite options in Washington. So you have to have all of your Oliver Norse and all of your colonels and majors and generals and brigadier generals and admirals appear on fascist Fox Network and stupid to the bone MSNBC and Wonder Bread for the Brain NPR. I'm just embarrassed by the lack of any sense and semblance of true introspective and not even existential, but actual intellectualized review of a problem. These are purely reactive issues, and they all have financial conflicts of interest. Yeah, as a popular conservative, if you drive, you've seen this bumper sticker. It says, freedom isn't free. But then again, neither is war. And so every year, we're going to see an increase in the privatization of our military and our police. And most of these are mercenaries. And you've got to stop them, and you can't stop them till you have people in power who are not afraid of them, the giant corporations and their lobbyists. Also, we embrace a national security state. Both parties do. Jimmy Carter was the last president to attempt to exercise any kind of control over the national security state. He was a former Navy nuclear engineer who had served under the demanding Admiral Hyman Rickover. Carter canceled the B-1 bomber and fought for U.S. foreign policy based upon human rights. He was widely pillared for talking about nuclear war with his young daughter, Amy. Carter was further attacked for being weak on defense. His defeat by Ronald Reagan in 1980 inaugurated 12 years of dominance by Republican presidents that opened the financial floodgates for the Department of Defense. That, in turn, taught one of the most mercenary people in the history of the world, Bill Clinton, and the Democratic Leadership Council, the Council on Foreign Relations, all the people, the thousands of people associated with this cancer upon the body. And they just kept using the national security state as a way of saying, this is where we should be. And this expedient turn to the right by the Democrats in the Clinton years served as a temporary booster shot when it came to charges of being soft on defense. You see, nobody can get elected if they say, we should be deconstructing the military-industrial complex. So just watch how these people all challenge each other, that they're going to do more killing, spend more money. They wouldn't care if every American was homeless, without food, and naked in the streets. They would still give more money to the military-industrial complex. That's how shamefully they have conducted themselves on the left and the right. And if you doubt me, look at Bernie Sanders. On many issues, I would agree with him, but not when it comes to his support of Israel, not when it comes to his support of the worthless, most expensive military procurement in history. An airplane that is worthless, but it's made in his state, and therefore, like everyone else, that's when he puts on his pimp outfit and goes out and supports jobs. But what about the consequences? No one ever thinks what about the consequences. They just think about jobs and getting reelected. Since his election in 2008, Barack Obama has done little to alter the course of his predecessors. Not only does it not challenge Washington's prevailing war, he has one-upped them. So there is no oversight anywhere in America of what we do, not of torture, not of drones, not of, as we recently were caught in Venezuela, of trying to cause another coup. We are bad to the bone everywhere. Everything we do anywhere when it comes to foreign policy is a mess. And from our supporting our troops, yeah, which troops you're talking about? Maybe I'm wrong here. Support your troops. That's when they have post-traumatic stress disorder. That's when you get them on psychiatric drugs that can cause suicide. That's when they're killing 23 of themselves each day, more than have died in the Iraq or Afghan war combined. That's when they go home and they beat up their kids and they can't be at home, so they're thrown out. And now they get in fights, or they're incarcerated, or they're living under bridges, or there are 16,000 of them over that I found. And then I went around the whole country filming them. Are those the same vets about support your troops? And did you ever see that commercial about Wounded Warrior? Why should we need a Wounded Warrior Foundation getting these prostheses and helping them? Isn't that the job of the military, the Veterans Administration, the Defense Department? If you're going to put someone in harm's way, shouldn't you be responsible for the consequences of that? So they do not support the troops. That is a lie. And they also are fighting a redacted war. War like the recent Senate torture report is redacted in America. Its horrors and mistakes are supposed to be open to us, and yet they're suppressed. It's patriotic whistleblowers that come forward, and they're all punished, even as the American people are kept in a demobilized state. The act of going to war no longer represents the will of the people, as represented by formal congressional declarations of war, as the U.S. Constitution demands. Instead, in these wars, Americans were told to go to Disney World, as George Bush suggested in the wake of 9/11, and keep shopping. They're encouraged to not pay too much attention to war's casualties and costs, especially when those costs involve foreigners with funny-sounding names. After all, they are, as American sniper Chris Kyle so indelicately put it in his book, just savages. And we'll have plenty of people to remind us that we're always on the right side because we have God and our religions on our side, and they're different. Redacted wars hide the true cost of a permanent state of killing from the American people, if not from foreign observers. Ignorance and apathy reign, even as a national security state that is essentially a shadow government equates its growth with your safety. And never once do we take into consideration what it is to be the innocent victim of our aggressions. Could you imagine the consequences of doing an honest report on 60 Minutes about what it means to be a child in Iraq, one of the 4,000 to 5,000 who died under sanctions from Clinton and Madeleine Albright? Could you imagine if we showed the Defense Department documents that were leaked, that it was intentional that we took out against the Geneva Convention, took out their water purification plants? These were not military. These were civilian water plants that were taken out, knowing full well that Saddam Hussein and his National Guard would have plenty of filtered water, but the poor people of Iraq wouldn't, and the kids would die. They were hoping that there would be an uprising. There wasn't. But you have a 500,000 dead babies and children. Do you think the American public would still support the aggression if we showed the faces and the stories of those children? No. And all the people on the left supported the invasion of Libya. Have they gone there now? Hey, you got the money, right? You got a lot of money. You're a millionaire, multimillionaire. You're way up there. Why don't you take your crew to Libya today, and why don't you see how that came out? How did your push for liberating the Libyans, how did that work out? And let's see Hillary there and all the other people. No, when we make colossal mistakes, and that's all we ever make, are colossal mistakes with these wars, we never go back. We didn't go back to Vietnam. We didn't go back to Grenada. We didn't go back to the ghettos of Panama. No. Nope. We redact that. So that's what we're about. When we define the whole world as a battlefield, then we become Fortress America. All realms have by now become battle spheres. Not only much of the planet, the seas, the air, the space, as well as the country's borders, and it's increasingly up-armored police forces, but the world of thought, the insides of our minds, they want to touch that in a way that they can control it. Think of the 17 intertwined intelligence outfits in the U.S. intelligence community and their ongoing surge for information dominance across every mode of human communication, as well as the surveillance of everything. And don't forget the national security state's leading role in making cyber war a reality. Indeed, Washington launched the first cyber war in history by deploying the Stuxnet computer worm against Iran. Did anyone in the media call him out? Was there a national discussion of how we broke the law when it was just discovered that the National Security Agency and its British equivalent broke into a private company's computer system and then put into every one of their computers the capacity to download that information? That's a felony. That's breaking the law. Is anyone going to be held accountable? No. Why? Think of all this as a global matrix that rests on war, empowering disaster capitalism, and the corporate complexes that have formed around the Pentagon, the Department of Homeland Security, and its intelligence community. A militarized matrix doesn't blink at $1.4 trillion devoted to an F-35, a single underperforming jet I mentioned earlier, nor are projections of $355 billion over the next decade for modernizing the nuclear arsenal. But hold on a second. Didn't he avow in 2009 to abolish our nuclear arsenal? Well, yeah, he avowed a lot of things. But now he's allowing $355 billion. Well, how much would it take to de-ghettoize all of America from Camden and Compton and all of the urban areas in every major city in the United States? About $300 billion. So, in other words, we could help get jobs, schools, health care, the type of input that people need at the local level, or we could spend it on modernizing our U.S. nuclear arsenal. Think about that for a moment. And he will be supported by the corporate Democrats all the way. So the new normal in America is war. War all the time. So that makes us exceptional. But there's one other aspect to this. Are you aware that now you can be pulled over and they can forcibly take your blood against your will? Yes. Yeah, our freedoms, especially the Fourth Amendment, are being choked out by a prevailing view among government bureaucrats that they have the right to search, seize, strip, scan, spy on, probe, pat down, taser, and arrest any individual at any time for any provocation or non-provocation. Forced cavity searches, forced colonoscopies, forced blood draws, forced breath alcohol tests, forced DNA extractions, forced eye scan, forced inclusion in biometric databases. Those are just some of the few ways in which Americans are being forced to accept that we have no control over what happens to our bodies during an encounter with the fascist government that we have today. Worst, on a daily basis, Americans are being made to relinquish the most intimate details of who we are, our biological makeup, our genetic blueprints, and our biometrics, your facial characteristics, your structure, your fingerprints, your iris scans, in order to clear the nearly insurmountable hurdle that increasingly defies life in the United States. We are all guilty until proven innocent. Thus far, the courts have done little to preserve our Fourth Amendment rights, let alone what shreds of the body integrity remain to us. According to John Whitehead, for example, remember David Eckhart? I talked about him on a show when this happened. He was forced to undergo an anal cavity search, 3 enemas, and a colonoscopy, and pay for it after he allegedly failed to yield to a stop sign at a Walmart parking lot. The cops justified the searches on the grounds they suspected him because he was standing kind of upright. His legs were too close together. Well, no drugs were found during a routine traffic stop, but that didn't stop him from doing all that and then billing him for it. Lila Tarantino was subjected to 2 roadside strip searches in plain view of passing traffic, during which a female officer forcibly removed a tampon from her. Nothing illegal was found. Nevertheless, such searches have been sanctioned by the courts, especially if accompanied by a search warrant, which is just a joke. No one ever questions. No judge. They're all idiots. They're all corrupt. They'll let you do anything. Our whole judicial system is just one giant fraud. Close to 600 motorists leaving Penn State University one Friday night were stopped by police and without their knowledge or consent subjected to a breathalyzer test, using flashlights that can detect the presence of alcohol in a person's breath. Now, these passive alcohol sensors are being hailed as a new weapon in the fight against DUIs. However, because they cannot be used as the basis for arrest, breathalyzer tests are still required. And for those who refuse to submit to a breathalyzer, you're forced to give blood. One such person was Michael Chorsky, who was surrounded by police, strapped to a gurney, and then had his blood forcibly withdrawn after refusing to submit to a breathalyzer test. Well, 30 states presently allow police to do forced blood draws on drivers. No refusal initiative is funded by the United States government. The National Highway Safety Administration, the same government agency that funds the no refusal DUI checks and forcible blood draws, is also funding nationwide roadblocks aimed at getting drivers to voluntarily provide police with DNA derived from saliva and blood samples. They simply want to study the patterns. So would you voluntarily, and of course, when you've got police with guns, how voluntary is it? And unfortunately, in 28 states, there's no voluntary about it. You have to give your DNA to the police when they want it. That's the way it works. Iris scans, an essential part of the U.S. military's boots-on-the-ground approach to keeping track of civilians in Iraq and Afghanistan, are becoming de facto methods of building the government's already mammoth metrics database. It's funded by the Department of Justice and other federal agencies. The Iris scan technology is being incorporated into police precincts and jails, airports. Every single demonstration you're likely to see a van, they're scanning eyes. That's why I wear my sunglasses, all my outside lectures now. So this is what we become. This is how free we are. What happens when your DNA profile is compromised? Could it be? Yes. Then suddenly you're found being arrested for a crime you did not commit. Remember, the Fourth Amendment was created to prevent government officials from searching an individual's person or property without a warrant and probable cause, evidence that some kind of criminal activity was afoot. The founders could scarcely have imagined a world in which we needed protection against widespread government breaches of our privacy on a cellular level. That's exactly what we have today. And if you think that the police somehow are not held to a different standard, 2 days before Christmas, according to Matt Pepe, a thug launched an unprovoked attack on a female MTA employee on a Bronx subway platform, choking her and causing injuries. That's according to the Daily News. The hulking brute, quote, then fled the scene, quote, grinning as he made his way through the turnstile. The newspaper's description conjures images of a fanatical psychopath aggressively assaulting an innocent victim and showing a twisted pleasure in his deranged actions while escaping. Several days later, the perpetrator was located, but he was not arrested. More than a month later, police announced that he will face only misdemeanor charges, even though, in New York City, you attack any of the MTA employees, it's a felony. Why? Because it turns out he's a 37-year-old New York City policeman. So, he gets a misdemeanor. He doesn't go to Rikers Island. And there were witnesses, and there's posters all over the MTA stations showing $2,000 to people report to police details of a crime against MTA employees. Well, this was it. And, quote, from their own ad, Transit Watch puts criminals on notice that if you assault a bus or subway employee, everyone who sees it is going to help put you in jail. Oh, they got to add something. Unless you're a New York City police officer, then you get a misdemeanor. This is such crap. I'm Gary Noll. What's your name, please?
Donald.
Hi, Donald.
I just wanted to pose a question about something I don't understand. Kind of doesn't add up. A lot of people who are demanding that children be vaccinated, and, you know, they're saying, well, our kids are vaccinated. If you don't vaccinate our kids will get sick. But isn't that a contradiction? Because if their kids are vaccinated and they believe the vaccines are effective, why would other sick kids get their kids sick? Am I stating this right?
You're stating it right, and had you been listening last night, or you could listen on the archives to the special one-hour program on Gardasil, this was addressed by one of these research scientists who's published specifically on this issue, and that is that in one country, for example, and I'll just use one country as an example, in South Korea, it is mandatory that every child be vaccinated. There is no opting out to the varicella or the chickenpox vaccine. And it's been mandated since 2005. Well, infants from 12 to 15 months are required by law to receive a vaccination. But the country reached a virtual universal compliance, meaning all kids were vaccinated. However, varicella patients did not decrease. They have increased since reaching this mandated level of vaccination. And the number of chickenpox patients reported to the Korean Center for Disease Control and Prevention has increased 22.6 cases per 100,000 in 2006. And now it is 71.6 cases. It is more than almost tripled since it was mandatory. That's a huge difference and ample proof that a vaccine program isn't working to control the spread of disease. And that is simply a matter of fact. In fact, in 2012 measles outbreak in Quebec, Canada, over half the cases were in vaccinated teenagers. An investigation into the outbreak in a high school in a town that was heavily hit by the virus found that at least 50% of the teens had received the recommended two doses of the vaccine childhood. In other words, teens whom authorities would have expected to have been protected from the measles weren't. And it's generally assumed that the measles vaccine, when given in a two-dose schedule in early childhood, should protect against measles infections about 99% of the time. So the discovery that 52 out of 98 teens who caught measles were fully vaccinated came as a shock to the researchers, and that was reported. And then in 1987, a measles outbreak was documented among the fully immunized children of, and this was published in the New England Journal of Medicine. And it documents a measles outbreak that occurred in Corpus Christi, Texas, in the spring of 1985. 14 adolescent-age students, all of whom had been fully vaccinated for measles, contracted the disease despite having been injected with the mRNA vaccine. Researchers know that more than 99% of the students at the school, basically all of them, had been vaccinated, with more than 95% of them showing detectable antibodies to measles. And yet it happened. And so this is not the first time that someone has raised this question. I have seen with all different diseases, measles, chickenpox, those who were vaccinated, fully vaccinated in large groups that were fully vaccinated, create what is called the herd effect. So that means that if you're an unvaccinated person, you threaten the herd. Well, that turns science on its head. If you're unvaccinated, it should mean that you only have one or two choices: either develop the disease like measles or chickenpox, and then you have lifetime immunity. But you don't get the disease, but you cannot then hurt someone who has it, because that means then that it's not effective. And then we discussed last night multiple articles in the scientific literature that show that the antibody expression in a given person is never, never consistent. Meaning, if you're supposed to be protected because the vaccine gives you antibodies, and then your body then makes copies of these antibodies, so when you're ever approached by the disease in your bloodstream, it'll recognize it and immediately kill it, it's different. Some people get a vaccine and get very little antibodies and be protected. Other people get massive antibodies and are not protected. And then it's also not clear that the antibodies to a given vaccine are protective, because many of the people who had adequate amounts of the antibodies came down with the condition. That meant that those antibodies were there, but they weren't protective antibodies, therefore undermining the entire cause of the idea of vaccination as a universal healthcare program. You could drive a truck through the contradictions within the so-called science of vaccines. Now, the good news is that there are more than 2 million parents. There are hundreds and hundreds of scientists and physicians who are coming forward, who finally looked at the evidence. It's very easy to have an opinion if you've never looked for the proof to support it, or cherry-picked your proof. It's something else when you do a careful, objective analysis and ask, what is the proof of vaccines are safe and effective? And as one of the scientists said last night, when I looked at the scientific evidence, and it's right there, you see that that they have never done a single study comparing a fully vaccinated group to a completely unvaccinated group. They're comparing the placebo is another vaccine. And as the scientist said, how in the world can you say that a vaccine that contains aluminum and polysorbate 80 and formaldehyde is a placebo. It's not a sugar pill. And the only group in the United States that has not been vaccinated, and it's a large group, are the Amish. And guess what the Amish don't have? Meningitis and autism and autoimmune diseases. Gee whiz, don't you think someone should do something about that and take a careful look? Yeah, but what happens if you have a $100 billion a year industry based upon a lie? Hope that answers your question. Thanks for your call. The hour flew by. I want to thank everyone for tuning in and listening, and I look forward to sharing more on our program tomorrow. Have a nice day, everyone.